Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprint on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour. On, today is the 4th of March, March 4th, 2009, or if you're on the East Coast, Central Time Zones here in the United States of America, it is the 5th. Of March, and anywhere east, all the way around the planet, it's the 5th, Thursday, or Wednesday on the West Coast. I don't want to mess up you folks out there in California and Oregon and Washington. I had the opportunity today to make contact with Walter Burian, who was scheduled a while back, and had to cancel the show. Actually, he canceled it a couple of days beforehand. It wasn't something that he was happy about doing. I spoke to the listening audience and asked you to consider contributing to Walter so that Walter can continue the great work he's doing exposing what's going on in the financial and economic community. Especially what's going on in New York, on Wall Street, and in Washington, D.C. And Walter's work is totally supported by folks that may hear him on a radio show or people that visit his CAFR1.com website. That's C-A-F-R, the number one, or the Roman numeral one, I should say. No, Arabic. Let's get that straight. C-A-F-R digit one .com. And Walter has a treasure trove of information on the U.S. Treasury, on the financial markets, on the banks. And he is actually going down the rabbit hole on the derivatives and hedge funds. He knows quite a bit about it. I got Walter to agree to come onto the show on the 17th of this month, and that's going to be an exciting show. That'll be 2 weeks from this past Tuesday. It is a Tuesday that he'll be on. Walter is very grateful for the folks that did donate some money, and I want to just remind you, he hasn't reached sort of the nut he has to crack in order to stay in business. So if you would consider donating, first of all, visit his website, and you'll see the mountain of research that he's done over the years. He's been at this for quite a long time. He's been victimized because he's bringing out the truth, and that's what we do on the show. And we want to not just support him, but we also are very interested in and looking at this information because it has everything to do with virtually every issue around the world. And it's all about money. Walter is an encyclopedia of information. And you'll be blessed, those of you who haven't heard him speak, you'll be blessed by the amount of information that he brings forward. He can basically tell you why we are who we are in terms of this fiat banking system and usury credit system that's been running this country since 1913 by foreign interests and much more. So we look forward to having Walter come on the 17th. And again, I ask you if you've got some spare change that you can throw his way, go to CAFR1.com. He's got a donate button there, and all the information you need is right there to help him out. We really appreciate whatever you can do for him. That said, we're going to get into tonight some definitions of who we are, and who we are in terms of our civil rights and our United States Constitution. We're going to set the record straight as to how we're viewed by those that would make us their slaves. For all intents and purposes, that's what they've done, even though they tell us they abolished slavery with the Emancipation Proclamation when Abraham Lincoln was president, shortly before they assassinated him. So with that, and we're going to get into some very specific details about who we are, what we're taken to be, and what we can do about it with tonight's guest. He is I would say, a constitutional scholar, a historian, and he's also a legal analyst of sorts. He can look at the law and he can tell you how it applies. And I don't think he's an attorney. He's going to disclose all that, but he's going to describe as best he knows the Constitution and our rights as sovereign beings under God. My good friend, Greg Pappas, welcome back to Evident Footprints, Greg.
Thank you very, very much, Don. It's an honor to be on with you tonight. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I just tried to describe you the best way I know how, having heard your message. And you might just say something like, well, I'm really a pool shark, and that's really what I
I think I would call myself this eclectic, strange scholar who I guess has studied about every subject there is that I thought would give me answers to my questions. And I originally didn't even know what the question was. I think I told you that back in 1983. I've been doing research for a long time in the Bible and history and the military and government and, oh, you name it, how politics works. And I remembered I knew, something told me that a lot of the answers were within the Bible, but I didn't know how to decipher it, and none of my friends did really either, even the ones that had graduated from seminary. They really used it as a religious tool as opposed to finding the truth. So I decided that I had a business. I wrote jingles with a friend of mine for commercials for a couple of years, and I realized that there was something wrong with all the world around me. I decided to apply to seminary, and so I went to seminary. But before I started seminary, I went on a project with Campus Crusade for Christ to Europe. And, well, I don't know if I should start off telling a story like this, Don, but anyways.
Greg, if I could interrupt, just make sure you stay close to your phone because your signal is a little bit weaker. Okay.
I faded there. Okay. All right, I'll speak right into it here. I'll start with a little brief story about what happened to me. And my background was kind of strange. I started off, let me back up a little bit before 1983. I grew up, I'm about your age, Don, just maybe a couple of years younger, and was caught up in the whole Vietnam era thing during my growing up years and didn't quite understand it. Nothing made any sense. And yet I was told to conform to what I was told, but I couldn't conform to what I was told to accept with regards to what happened at the government or anything around me, even in school. Something always told me there was something wrong. So even when I was a kid in early church, I knew that there was something true about God, but there was something wrong about the way that religion was presenting God.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had started off even when I was a little tiny kid, I would Greek Orthodox and wouldn't kiss pictures and light candles like I was supposed to do as a good little boy. And I knew something was wrong with all that. So when I got a little bit older, my parents had actually left the Greek Orthodox Church and gone to a Protestant-type church, and there I got a little bit more answered, but still there was a lot of masking going on. So I started reading the Bible on my own, started studying history, started studying... I wasn't a law scholar or anything else. I just didn't accept what I was being told in the public school system or in my church. So, but I did believe at the time, because my whole all the men in my family had served in the military, that I probably ought to have to serve in the military too. But it's because none of them would actually tell me what they really thought about the military and what wars were all about, conflicts. Mm-hmm. So I applied to the Air Force Academy back in 1972, I think it was, or 71. I can't remember now. 72. And ended up in Air Force ROTC, in college, and, had a series of experiences that showed me that nothing was as it seems. So, I guess I'll throw this one out first. I think it was in February of 1976, I was at, in an ROTC class at the University of Southern California, and, this was my junior year in college. We were cadet officers at that point, and, instructor came into the classroom, when I went to attention, and, then he said, "At ease, man, sit down, close your books, shut up, I'm gonna give you a 2-hour lecture on military intelligence, classified top secret." And we all thought he was joking. And, but he was dead serious, and he told us that he'd just gotten passed up for his third promotion to lieutenant colonel, and that he wanted to give us an opportunity to know the truth that he was never told before and during his time in active duty. And as an Air Force officer, been in for 13 years, was passed up for his third promotion opportunity to lieutenant colonel, and was being removed from the military because he was a very positive, outspoken man and wanted people to have the truth about what was really going on. So spent 2 hours giving us a lot of information that today would probably pretty much all be declassified. But there's one that he told us that started me on my path to uncover mysteries. And that was the following. This man was the senior officer on duty in the communications center in South Vietnam. I'm not sure the exact day. It was either January 10th, 11th, or 12th, but I think it was probably the 10th of 1973. And he received a communique, two-word communique from North Vietnam. And of course, I'm getting this information in February of 1976. So it's obviously very, very close to the time proximity where he actually had this communication come, just 3 years later. Anyways, it was a two-word communique, unconditional surrender from North Vietnam, from Hanoi. And to me, at that time, I was in total shock because, of course, we were all told that the United States had capitulated and fled with our tail between our legs from Vietnam. Now there was about 35 pilot and navigator candidates in that classroom that heard that discussion with that instructor. Anyways, that's what got me off on my path to find answers. There was a number of other stories he told us that were declassified in U.S. News and World Report studies back in 1993, where they showed that the military had disavowed the existence of pilots over supposedly enemy territories like China and Russia and other regions have been shot down and they didn't exist. But that, again, in 1976, those were not newsworthy. I mean, they were newsworthy stories. They were secret. But of course, they came out in 93. But anyway, so that got me going. And, I decided that I was going to find answers. And I figured that if there was a God, I had to find out who that God was also to see how I could get on a path of life that would, keep me in straight path with the Creator and help me get answers that I would be able to use, never thinking that I'd eventually tie the truths of the Bible and the truths of the real God with what's really going on in our world, which is really why I'm where I'm at today, that I've been able to find answers that connect the two. But anyways, in 1973 or 1983, I was in Greece working on a project with Campus Crusade for Christ. And I had been seeking direct answers to find out where the connections are in the Bible with practical life. They seem to be pretty much esoteric or, you know, revolving around saying magic prayers and supposedly having eternal life with God, but never having them have any actual practical application here while we're on the earth. And a lot of things didn't add up for me. For example, the commercial world, the way it's operated, though I at that time had a bachelor's degree in management, didn't really understand the basics of commerce. In other words, what was the purpose behind the banking system, the way it operated, the bonding system, how did the Wall Street world work, how did the government interact with it, what was our roles in it, how did debt apply to us, where did we fit with all this, and I'll go into that here in a few minutes. But long and short of it is, and I was seeking answers from the Creator, and he kept directing me to these various answers, and finally, in 1983, I think it was in July of 83, I was in Thessalonica, Greece, and I spent a day with a scholar there and never got any of my questions answered adequately, and left his house a little bit disappointed, and I had to walk down from the top of the hill to the port where my hotel was. And on the way down there, I just cried out to God. I said, I really need you to show me the answer to who you are and to what I'm supposed to be doing here on this earth. And why am I seeking all these questions to begin with? And if I am, if there's a purpose behind this that's practical, please show me. Well, I got my answer. And I'm not one for hearing audible voices, but it basically spoke to me as I was walking past these closed shops on the way down back to the hotel. He said to me, be patient, Greg. I'm going to give you all the answers. And so I was kind of shocked. In fact, not kind of shocked. I was totally shocked. And so I threw out a fleece like a Gideon and said, well, I'm sorry, but you haven't spoken to me like this before. Would you please do me a favor and say it again, or at least state it in a way that I'll understand what you're saying? And he said to me again, be patient, Greg. I'm going to give you all the answers. And so I basically started off on a path of getting answers that started connecting the dots between the world that we live in, the commercial world, and then the religious world, and the context of what it was that Jesus Christ intended for us to understand out of those four Gospels and then the other epistles that were written, and plus other extra-biblical things that were yanked out of the canon of Scripture in the Nicene Council in 325 A.D. So from there, Don, I started seminary at the end of that summer, and before I did that summer, I think I shared some of this with you in a previous conversation, but I had several things happen to me that summer after that those words were given to me. Found out that my family line, I'm a full-blooded, well, I'm half Macedonian and half Southern Greek, and I found out that summer that my ancestors on the paternal side, the father's side of the family, were they traced their lineage back and their faith in the true Jesus Christ back to the Apostle Paul, going back to his first missionary journey to Greece and Macedonia and Thessalonica and Philippi, back around in, I guess, in the early 40s A.D. And it was totally flabbergasted me when I found this out. And I saw the evidence in these people that they were practitioners of true faith in the living God through Jesus Christ, but didn't play Greek Orthodox religion. Well, they did, to the sense that they would go to church within the Orthodox Church about three or four times a year for state holiday things, but the rest of the time they followed Christ on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really remarkable, and because I think your ancestry goes back to that region of the world, Macedonia, as well. Right?
Yes, that's rather synchronous, isn't it?
It sure is. So,
now, I wanted to ask you a question here, Greg. When God spoke to you, did he, by any chance, mention the Uniform Commercial Code?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was
you found that out on your own.
Yeah, not that. In fact, I'll make a joke about that right now. He also didn't tell me to go have a birth certificate created for my kids when they were born either, just like he had warned King David not to do a census and register the people like was done there by Caesar Augustus in Luke chapter 2.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't tell us to be registered, to be taxed, to become somebody's chattel slavery, which is going to be basically the basis of my contention when I show that Jesus Christ, I believe the whole purpose of his coming at the exact time that Augustus Caesar gave that order to be taxed there in Luke 2, when Miriam and Joseph, his parents, took him to Bethlehem, that to show us that he was turned into a legal dead fiction just like we were with our birth certificates. And that I believe, so my thesis would be, is that the true message of Jesus Christ is not one of religious nonsensical magical prayers and wishful thinking, but was one of a very practical application of a freeing of the people from commercial bondage. And
mm-hmm.
that what he was teaching of the forgiveness of sins and debts was literally the cancellation of fraudulent sins and debts that were created on the heads of all the people that had been registered to be taxed within the Roman Empire by their bankers, which were the Judeans running the central bank of basically Jerusalem and for the Roman Empire out of the temple in Jerusalem. And so I believe, just like today, or just like in those days, that people's heads were being monetized to run their phony banking world, as it had been done 2,000 years before that in Babylon and Egypt. That's what Jesus came to free the people of, the very same thing that we're experiencing today. Ironically, Don, I also see the correlation between what Jesus did with what Moses did 2,000 years before him and what's happening today, that the people are enslaved for up to 2,000 years. An age change takes place, like from Moses it was the age of Taurus to Aries, from Jesus it was the age of Aries to Pisces, and now 2,000 years later we're at the age of Pisces to Aquarius, all three of which Jesus does address one way or the other, but specifically the age of Pisces and the age of Aquarius, in his own words in the four Gospels. I know it's in other places, but they couldn't pull all the words out, and they left a few indications that the age that he was entering into was an age of grace and an age of freedom from usury and slavery, and an age going into community away from centralized banking or centralized slavery through mortgages and other forms of debt. But my contention is that the birth certificate that was created on Jesus back in, I think it was about 4 B.C., is the same exact process that was brought forward in 1921 when the birth certificate was brought here. And I have evidence to show that World War II was funded off of the registration, not only of the birth certificates, but since most people hadn't had birth certificates at that time, it was built off of the registration of those that registered for the draft, mm-hmm. and for going into World War II. And so I have a friend who was a banker. His father was a banker, and his father told him how the draft worked. And I've been able to draw parallels from what he told me about how men came in to be registered for the draft, and then when they called the draft up, those registration forms were monetized. We don't know the exact amount. It could have been 100,000, could have been 500,000. I have no idea what the exact amount was. But for each man that was drafted in World War II, when they came and actually went and were inducted into the military, the moment that they stepped forward across the line to really volunteer, they really weren't drafted. If you think about it, we have laws against involuntary servitude. So the trick in America is if you're drafted, you have to take a step forward. Of course, I've known of men who knew to step backwards and were not inducted into the military. But anyways, for the most part, most men didn't know, and they took that step forward and were inducted in. And that moment, that registration of the draft was created a commercial instrument that literally built up the war machine. And literally the war was funded on the heads of every man that went to war. And I believe it was done in Germany and Russia and everywhere else the same. And mm-hmm. then... So that's how I see it, and that's how I see the birth certificate today, in essence, for us. And by the way, they didn't care whether you survived the war, you were wounded, or you died. It didn't make any difference. They still got the full funding off of it. And that's how come I was trying to figure out for years how it is the wealthiest people in the world always ended up wealthier at the end of a war while everybody else was left completely wiped out.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting is the whole birthing process as far as people are concerned, and I guess this is the case with all mammals to some extent, although the place where this occurs is can be quite different. The whole process of birthing uses these legal terms such as and they're used by the medical community as well as the legal community. You have a pregnant woman who's about to give birth. She goes into the delivery room, and she experiences labor, and her water breaks, and the baby moves through the birth canal. And as you already mentioned, once the baby is born, after usually a smack on the rear end, then the baby is issued a certificate. And that goes back to the tradition of maritime law, doesn't it? In other words, they're already making us sort of vassals to that system, unbeknownst to the parents, of course, and unbeknownst to the child. But we're considered property of the state, and any private contracts that the state has with whatever other entity has an interest. So I'm sure you've if you haven't heard of it, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it, that they use those
that's
terms?
That's absolutely the truth. That, without a doubt, that is absolutely what's done. The terms, in fact, who's the child delivered to? The doc? The doc?
Yes,
for.
Yes, yeah, yeah, to the doc. And, yeah, that's correct.
Right, so everything, and then so we're launched onto a sea of commerce, where I believe it's, I've been read that it's 45 days that the father has to recapture, and of course that birthing certificate, which is basically a manifest, a shipping manifest, is listed, the father's name is listed in his profession, the mother's name is listed, but the mother's the only one who signs it as an informant, mm-hmm. thus making the child illegitimate under parens patriae, making mm-hmm. them a ward of the state, a ward of the king, and of course that's how then they can get away with monetizing it, because fathers, including myself, did not know that, you know, we knew about the Social Security number, but didn't understand the birth certificate, because there was really nobody teaching this 25 years ago, 30 years ago. There was no real understanding of what was happening there. Plus, hospitals, we found out, are paid a minimum of $5,000 per birth certificate. And they will threaten people that if they won't complete a birth certificate, they won't release the child, which is a total bluff, total BS, but it's still the game that they play on people to make them believe that they have an obligation to complete this instrument. So mm-hmm. those of us like myself that thought it was good not to give them Social Security numbers didn't understand that the entire birth certificate itself was the commercial instrument, basically verifying that we were all commercial slaves.
Mm-hmm. And now with that let's say, foreground or that foundation, we're told that we are here in America born in the land of the free, the land of liberty. And that reminds me of another naval term that they use, because the soldiers, when they set port and are given liberty, are allowed to go onto land in the particular area where they've dropped anchor, and they have a limited amount of time under liberty, and then they have to return. Now, if they're fighting for liberty, why do they have to be given liberty to do that, to leave the ship? Okay? So we really don't have freedom. And I've recently described to another person that in the context of a prisoner in a cell, he's imprisoned, he's serving a penalty for a supposed crime. It could very likely be that person committed a crime, but it's not always the case, as we're finding out more and more frequently. But during his incarceration, he or she, because it happens to women too, they are given the opportunity to go out of the cell into a mess hall or into a courtyard, an exercise yard, or a community shower, or some other function outside of the cell, and at that moment they are released from the cell. They have liberty, but they don't have freedom. They're still in the confines of a wall, barbed wire, armed guards, dogs, drugs, whatever torture methods they want to use, whatever abuse they want to impart, and yet when they go back into the cell, basically they are experiencing the maximum penalty of that situation. Now, we are given certain rights. We are told we're free. We're given certain rights, much like them going out into the mess hall. But if you try to get over the fence, no. You see? Really, we're imprisoned. We just don't see the bars. Would you agree with that?
Fully. I would fully agree with that, that we are... especially in light of the more I study the commercial world, we were born we were led to believe we were free, but literally we were created, we were put into a prison of our mind. It's kind of like, you know, we have to learn how to free our mind from the things that we've been told. So yes, I fully agree, Don, that we were tricked into saying that we were free, all the while set up with a whole series of obligations that we never can break out of.
Okay.
At
now there's some.
Steve not be able to break out.
Yeah. Now there are some listening audience members who are probably thinking, "My goodness, if this is true, what do we do about this?" In other words, you know, how can this be true? Number one, it's difficult for somebody this late in the game to come to the realization that it has been so. Yet this is not a lost cause, is it?
No, not at all. In fact, that's one of the reasons that all my parallel studies have been able to draw together. I've been able to take biblical studies and historical studies and law studies and studies of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and put it together and find, I believe, an ultimate conclusion that could literally could but will free each and every one of us individually who chooses to leave the state of mind or the state of the administrative world slavery that's been put upon us and literally return or go to some place we probably have never been in our lifetimes, but a place of freedom, true freedom, and it doesn't mean leaving this country or leaving the land that we live on, but it means changing some of the thoughts we have, like what is a country, mm-hmm. What is a state, but it's all, to me, the verification of it has been on the work and the teachings of Jesus Christ, which in the Sermon on the Mount, if you don't mind, if I just say this really quick, the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7, in the New Testament there, the first of the Gospels of the New Testament, he's indicating, I believe, the beginning of a process of freeing people from commercial bondage, because under the old law, the Mosaic law was a massive amount of laws, and I'm going to hypothecate here for a second. I don't have all the evidence to support what I'm going to say, but I believe this to be true. There's an Old Testament book called the Book of Enoch. It's been yanked out of the Bible in 325 AD. It was removed. From the scholars that I've spoken with that know the book, say it's profoundly the most powerful book of the Old Testament. And that book is quoted by Jesus and the apostles throughout the New Testament, including the New Testament that we have, and in other books that were yanked out of the New Testament. But in this book, Enoch basically states that the first commandments that Moses came down with were commandments of life and freedom. They included ways to heal the body, ways to form communities, and for people to not practice commerce, but to operate their whole society in love, no competing with each other, and literally like the way the Native American societies had operated until the white men came in and destroyed the culture here in North America and South America, for that matter. And what I might say then is that I believe that what Jesus was doing was coming, and then the second Ten Commandments that were created after Moses threw the first ones down were a bunch of rules and regulations for people who were going to be stuck in commerce their entire lives. And that's why for 2,000 years the people were in one commercial disaster after another. Let me wrap this one part up too. They will explain also the 40 years in the wilderness that they experienced as a transitional period where they could have come out, but they chose to stay in the commercial world. So the evidence of the conflicts and wars and everything else for 2,000 years under a commercial Old Testament law system. And by the way, there were 600 and something laws in the Old Testament, and there were more created as the religious leaders became more powerful. And the religious leaders themselves never kept those rules, much less the people, but they enforced them upon the people. Sounds like today. We've got millions of laws today, and the people that create them don't have to abide by them, but the victims or the slaves, which we are tricked into being bound to them. So Don, I believe that Jesus, when he came in the Sermon on the Mount, he was freeing people from the law in Matthew 5, 17, and 18. Mm-hmm. And then in Matthew 7, 12, he lays out the final determination as to what you can choose to be. In essence, in 5, 17, he's saying, you can be under the law. But in 7:12, he says, "Do not therefore all things, whatever you desire that men should do to you, so you should do to them. This is the law and the prophets." Excuse me. That's the higher law. And I believe that what he's done for us has shown us a way that we could technically find our way out of this commercial disaster of slavery that we were brought into and come to the same freedom of the forgiveness of debts which he was forgiving back in the first century. And yeah. I believe that that's what we can participate in.
Well, you're describing the reason why many of us are here, actually, and that's for that very purpose, to lead the masses into that understanding and make that become, as you referred to, a reality. I have talked about personal responsibility a number of times, did it for 2 months straight on this show, whether it was a sort of a monologue as a teaching lecture, if you want to call it that, and with my guests. They were all highly cooperative and enthused about sharing these discussions, that we can't look at a problem and pretend like it's not there to make it go away. That's how the government operates. In fact, they fully know what they're going to do and what the outcome's going to be before they do it. Their biggest problem is keeping us from discovering the corruption involved in what they do. And all they can do in defense of what they've done is to pretend like they didn't get caught and begin defaming those that speak the truth about it. So it begins with us individually and then collectively, like you described in Jesus' teaching. What he was encouraging us to do was to love one another. That was the basic rule, the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Simple, right there, because that's the highest expression of love. We have a dichotomy down here. Everything is the opposite of what they tell us. It's called the Hegelian dialectic. It's, yep. To maintain order in the universe, you've got to have the negative side, okay? You have negative and positive that balance each other. You take one away and the other disappears. So even those that are on this mad dash to control the world haven't figured it out themselves. They presume, as they follow Satan and all the evil that's roaming through the universe, that they are going to somehow replace God by doing that. And it's going to be their downfall. So now we're at a point now in our discussion where we can begin looking at, since we know that we have been created to be serfs or slaves, although they do the best to obfuscate history or to just outright create different stories, totally different from what's actually happened throughout thousands and thousands of years. Hundreds of thousands of years, really. We're at a point now where that's been done, okay? We don't have to buy into this any longer. We can immediately change things, turn them around overnight if we choose to. Overnight. Now, when a story comes to mind, I don't know who the senator was, but there was a Roman senator that suggested that all the slaves wear a white armband. And another senator spoke up, this is in Rome, of course, not Washington, and he said that wouldn't be a good idea because when they saw how many of them were wearing armbands, they would revolt.
Yes.
Okay. Now, some people are awakened to this fact that we have been enslaved, and then there are those that are oblivious to it. Now, we can't count on them. We can do our best to try to wake them up, but we might even be interfering with their karma in that respect because it is a free will universe. So it becomes a point where every individual has to make a choice. They're going to be given a choice. They're going to follow good or they're going to follow evil. And right now, Washington, D.C., as it's set up as an administrative commercial enterprise, with foreign interests controlling it, the 68 square miles that everyone thinks is the center of freedom in this country is actually the center of all the corruption on the planet currently. Do you agree with that?
Fully, 100%. A lot of my premise now is built on the work of Lee Brobst in USA the Republic is the house that no one lives in, and it's predicated on exactly what you just said, that the center. The government, or the whatever perceives as a government. I've got a friend that keeps reminding me every time I say the word government, think about what it says: governmental, regulating the mind, controlling the mind. Mm-hmm. So this group of people that is really taking control of our mind is taking control of the mind of the world through force and stealth and through intrigue and all kinds of things that we don't hear about in this country. Yeah, absolutely, runs the world and it's the center of this entire. Nightmare. But you're right about the armband thing too. If we there's so many of us that are starting to wake up that there's a potential threat to this global takeover. But But in some ways, Don, it's already complete. We're like starting behind the eight ball. All the people of this world are slaves, you know, and we're just redeemed as a collateral damage, you know, when something happens. As you've been doing your research on the airplane crashes and all the insurance policies and everything on everybody, that that we are that collateral to be used. And part of what I've been teaching is to find a way out of that. How do those of us that choose to leave that quote unquote matrix of slavery, how do we find a way out? And then in doing so, how do we ensure that we're left out, that the other side now has to acknowledge us and have cognizance of our choosing to separate from this presumed slave mindset or the slave status?
Jesus had a phrase for that, did he not? He said, man cannot serve two masters, for he will love one and hate the other.
Yeah, cling to the one and despise the other. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
That's exactly that. And he was, and yet all those people that take that will be the same guys will preach that one minute. The next minute they'll say, well, if you're a servant, stay a servant. And that's not what Jesus said. You know, and the apostles are quoted often as saying that if you're a slave, stay a slave. The problem I have with any of these people that teach today, they don't even know what slavery is or was. I mean, biblical slavery, according to Deuteronomy 18, was you could volunteer into servitude for 7 years, but at the end of 7 years, you were to be paid for the time you were actually a slave, and you were to be given land and or resources to get started to survive on your own. In fact, that's how bond servants came to the colonies early in the colonial period, when they didn't have any money to come from Europe, and they would have somebody sponsor them. The people would come over with a skill. They'd work for those people for 7 years. At the end of that time period, they would be left some gold or silver and or a piece of land and be able to start on their own. And so it was not perpetual bondage. The system we have today is completely untenable because they're operating just like Israel had done when they were in disobedience to the Creator, under complete permanent slavery, that people would be placed in permanent slavery with no way out. And that is what we're experiencing. And again, my purpose is to honor God and follow the message of Jesus Christ and free myself. Then after freeing myself, help free others that have that same desire for freedom.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned, you know, these people that were given the land and given the opportunity to basically be caretakers of the land, because they were taxed still, weren't they, by the kings and the queens and the aristocracy.
The founding of this country, yes, go ahead.
Well, I'm speaking even about, you know, in Europe, for example, or any place in the world where people were given land after performing that voluntary servitude, they were still taxed. And they had to, not just money, they had to give up goods and sometimes members of their family for the types of reasons that children and young women are abducted today. This practice hasn't died.
No, it's still there. In fact, I think it's predicated on what Broke's thesis is what Jefferson and the founders saw was the divine right of kings nonsense. Which is still plaguing the world today. This fact, this whole cabal that runs the world today is still founded on the same principle, and that's how they've gotten their religious system to operate all the governments of the world, under the premise that there's a divine right of somebody to rule. And of course, when you're a member of the cabal, whether it be whatever part you've entered it through, whether it's Freemasonry or the Jesuit or Zionist processes, and there's a myriad other ones too. All the religions are participating one way or the other. If you're into this thing, then you trade your position within the system. You'll pay your taxes. You'll pay your loyalty, your part to the king. And so that was what the founders didn't want. And I think that's what Probst writes about when he addresses in 1760 when Lord Mansfield in England allowed the Roman civil law to merge with the British common law. It's about the same time that the foreclosures were taking place on all the country palaces that were built that they couldn't pay for because the Industrial Revolution was beginning. And all these lands that had mortgages, much like we've just seen here in this country, you know, properties went from $100,000 to $1 million and back down to $100,000. That's what was happening then. And they couldn't pay them, so all the titles of nobility were transferred from the actual original family lines to this Zionist line. And they took over the House of Lords, and then put in this Mansfield's decree setting up a Roman civil law system, which then they were going to start taxing the people in the colonies just like they had done in England, and the people were in dire straits in England. And so they looked to take from the colonies, and that's when Jefferson, in his early 20s, and others began writing letters to oppose this. And their opposition then led to an established understanding that rights do not come from kings, they do not come from religion, but they come from the Creator, and they're unalienable and unalienable, that they're completely unremovable, and there's not any documents that man can write that will give you your rights, because our rights are derived from the Creator of the universe. And of course, Don, this is why the great disconnect we have today with people claiming they have constitutional rights, when the reality is that the Declaration, the Articles of Confederation, the Constitution, 1787, and the Bill of Rights, 1791, were really just ways for a government to operate and were restrictions on people that worked for the government upon those that were free and sovereign men upon the land. But everything somehow switched to where we were all brought into being a servant status through the 1933 Emergency War Powers transition of the Trading with the Enemies Act, with the confiscation of the gold, which abrogated all of our laws and brought us all from having sovereign rights to being 14th Amendment United States citizens, at which time we were all brought into this trust position with basically saying we received benefits even though we weren't even the beneficiaries, and as a result became slaves. And the first court case that tested that was Erie Railroad versus Tompkins, 1938, and the court stated that there was no longer a federal, general federal common law. But of course, that was a lie. There was still general federal common law from Swift versus Tyson in 1842. If one man would stand up and say, "I'm a sovereign of the republic," and, or would assert his position of sovereignty over and above that of being a 14th Amendment citizen. Mm-hmm.
Well, all that is all that is true, Greg. And yet, we have the Virginia Company and the New England Company, which precedes that by a few hundred years. So, even though we're told I agree with what you're saying. You're laying out the secret documents that actually are the foundation on which this country was built. But behind the scenes, they had the Virginia Company and the New England Company were two descendants of the King of England. In a sense, two of his agents, okay? One being George Payser, who changed his name to George Bayshore and began the Virginia Company actually operating out of North Carolina, and then the New England Company, which was Louis Payser, who eventually, you know, all of this was for George III. Okay, uh-huh. All of this, the railroads, the shipping, the 50% of all the mineral rights in perpetuity, this has never been stricken, and it was a secret agreement, so it should be unlawful, but it's the same with the Federal Reserve. Actually, 20 years before 1933, in 1913, Nelson Aldrich basically committed treason and push that through, but these people, I tracked them coming to the United States as early as 1903, 10 years prior to that. Paul Warburg, James Loeb. Actually, James Loeb was not born. Now I'm speaking of Loeb from the Kuhn and Loeb family. He was the son of one of the founders of that company. He entered the United States telling a customs agent, and I've seen the document, where he makes a statement that he had never been in the United States before, and he was from Landsberg, Germany. Now, why would anyone who's an American make such a statement? You have to ask yourself that, okay? Yet Harvard's classic library has him listed as the founder on their page, and they've yet to dispute my article exposing that corruption. Not a word about it, okay? So this is the kind of deception that universities, especially one as prestigious as Harvard, with this big law school, you know, if they're willing to say that the founder of their Loeb Classic Library is born in the United States when he himself admits to a customs agent that he's from Germany, and had never been in the United States. And we're talking about someone who was in his 30s when he did this. then how should we believe Barack Obama in 1991, somewhere around that time period, went to Harvard University? I mean, it doesn't matter what year he says, because no one can produce a record showing that he was there, or at Columbia, or at Occidental, or at the Punahou School in Hawaii. Okay? And their only substantiation is Photoshop pictures. Okay? The amount of corruption that these people, and the length they go through to produce false documents and to hide the truth from us is unfathomable. And yet, we're discovering the truth of that, okay? Now, the hard thing, and you mentioned all the mind control, the propaganda. You didn't use those words, but basically, when a person is born into such a corrupt system, which is designed just to take what you profit from your labor and turn that into their cash cow, they have every reason to be secretive and deceptive about it, don't they?
Absolutely. In fact, what you're saying basically is that these people have literally continued to operate this divine right of kings through stealth, through this commercial world, and basically been able to play it against us or play it on us and victimize us because of our absolute ignorance. That those that have purported to be our teachers, and take any subject at all, from education to religion to politics to everything else, they themselves were deceived, accepted the deception, never asked any questions, passed it on to us, and kept us completely in the dark. And so, you know, my theory on this is that we had two chromosomes removed from us, is why we have two less chromosomes than the rest of the other creatures on this earth, and we were supposed to be just working slaves. In fact, yeah. I believe that the 1213 document that John the First, Richard Lionheart's brother, signed with the Vatican after they cut him off from being able to trade with the rest of Europe, putting himself and the following kings and queens in complete political contract with the Vatican as literally arch treasurers and tax collectors for the Roman Empire, which then I believe was all predated about by a year and a half or so, the Magna Carta in 1215. And then you take the Treaty of Paris that was signed by signed in Paris supposedly by the envoys of King George III, ending the Revolutionary War here, lists George as the most preeminent name on the first page of that and the Treaty of Peace, listing him as the arch-treasurer and most potent prince and arch-treasurer of the Holy Roman Empire. Mm-hmm. So you can see that this combination of the powers of Europe with the Vatican and the bankers, class of Rothschilds and others, have put together a system that is all predicated on our ignorance and our unwittingly becoming and remaining their slaves throughout our lifetimes.
Yes, yes. Now, I don't mean to get you off track here, but we do have a caller. Would you like to take a call?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Okay, we have Ron from Pennsylvania. Ron, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Thank you, Don. How are you guys doing this evening?
We're doing great. How about yourself?
Fair, my eyes are getting blurry, but I wanted to mention that the guest so far has a lot of worthwhile information, but for those that may be listening, obviously they're listening on the internet, so they have computers. There's another outlet if somebody wants to peruse the law and what a big mess it is. If they go to their county library, and if that library is a federal depository, they are required to have certain publications here, one of which I have. I have the whole U.S. Code in its hardbound form. And they have the Code of Federal Regulations, a congressional record back so far. And they will have your state laws as well. Now, in some states, the law is a mess. Each of the counties seem to have their own kingdoms as to how they do things. They have the rules of criminal procedure, rules of civil procedure, the rules of court, which they don't obey, and I know that from experience, and so on. Now, you don't have to subscribe to LexisNexis or Westlaw or FindLaw or anything else like that. Mm-hmm. You can get down to your local library. Now, what the guest mentioned about the induction system on draft is true. Now, what some people don't know, maybe they do, is that the draft system is perfectly legal, but it's not legal to affect it in an undeclared war. Congress has to declare that. Now, years ago, when a lot of the guys in Vietnam were drafted, they ran to Canada, and they were perfectly legally correct. Now, at that time, there was no extradition. And there was a quip on the NBC News, oh, years ago, commenting on that. Some Canadian official or businessman stated that, yeah, the Americans come up here, it's perfectly legal, and they were good contributors, they were helpful, they were businessmen, and so on. Send more of them up here. And what happened later was the United States, if you may remember, yelled up there that, well, if you guys want to come back, we will grant you amnesty. There was no amnesty to grant because there's no violation. And they just did that, the U.S., to save their ugly face. But once you are in the induction center, and he's correct, that one step forward, you step away from the Constitution of the United States and into the realm of admiralty law across that line of demarcation. That has a legal purpose behind it. And there are two sets of laws, one for us, the normal people, and for the ones down in Washington, D.C. And how you can bear that out is, I can't remember the volume, I have them all over the place. You will see, I think, in this discrimination section in one particular volume, that the word citizen is capitalized within the sentence, and in another sentence it is not. That denotes two different groups of people. Now,
yeah.
If somebody wants to go down to the library from time to time, I would suggest in the federal and state laws to just go ahead and get the general index out to familiarize yourself with what you may be interested in and the language. And then, you know, you could go through it at your leisure. But the I see laws and regulations violated left and right, up and down, in and out, constantly, constantly. Now, I don't have a legal mind, you know, I don't have total recall, but these books are out there. They're practically giving this to you. And it is probably prudent to go and check those things out from time to time, too, because it does affect us all.
Yeah.
But it takes I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to comment, and I want to allow Greg to make a comment, too. I was going to comment to your comment that you don't have total recall. Well, I would say that none of the Congress or the Senate has total recall either, because they violate the very laws they create. Now, they consider themselves privileged to do so. I think we should follow suit and do the same thing.
Well,
I'm not encouraging people to get themselves into trouble, but you know, you have corruption telling the good people in this country who think that they're doing what is right, telling us what we can and cannot do while they continue being corrupt. That's the main point I want to make. Greg, do you want to comment quickly?
I would like to. Appreciate your supporting what I was saying, Ron. I appreciate that very much. I think what's happened is this. And my premise is to show us that how we can repatriate ourselves back to the sovereignty of God. I was originally saying back to the sovereignty of the Republic, but if I look more deeply at what Jefferson and the brilliant men stated, is that our rights come from God, that they can't be abrogated by any form of government whatsoever in any way, shape, or form. And so I'm saying is this, these all these laws and codes and statutes that, Don, you just mentioned these people have a privilege from, it's that exact opposite. Anybody who's sworn that oath to uphold that Constitution has put themselves in a position of government or as an agent or of a principal of some agency as part of this government is the one who's bound to all the rules, regulations, and laws of the government. And my contention is, and I won't be able to prove this all tonight because we don't have all night to talk, but my contention is that I believe that we have found a way to bind them to that through their own rules and regulations under the administrative world. In other words, I don't believe we have to worry about what the administrative world is doing to us any longer, that they've got the fourth branch of government and the third part of Congress fighting each other and these other things that are going on amongst these people. But I believe that we can take and bind them to their own rules. For example, I believe that the Republic still exists at the post office, that the court really exists with the postmaster, that they try to hide it under the Postal Service. And that's why I believe the Title 18, 1342, and 1341 is what we can use as a battering ram against these people and literally bind them to their oaths. The other part we can bind them to is if we repatriate back to being children of God or sons of God under the Republic, that under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, Title 28 U.S.C. 1602 to 1611, and there's various other places. I think it's mixed in 1301, or 1300 and 1302 and 1442 in Title 28. You can actually bind these people under that because in the definitions in 1603, it states what a foreign state is. And guess what? The District of Columbia, which is a municipal corporation, which is the front for all the rest of the municipal corporations, is a foreign state to the Republic, not the other way around. Meaning that the Republic has a higher standing in the law. So all these people that told us they've been running us through the courts and screwing with our heads and making us do this and that while they masquerade as a specter hiding their form behind a black robe, the reality is the game they played is up. The secrets are out. It's over. They're little, and ironically, gentlemen, the movie The Matrix, the very first movie, gives away all of their secrets to the entire system, how it operates. And maybe we could do a whole show just talking about The Matrix sometime, Doc.
So does, yeah, absolutely. And so does The Wizard of Oz. I mean, since 1939, they've been showing this every year, okay, teaching the children and re-educating the teenagers and the young adults, the middle-agers, and even the old folks. Everyone has been indoctrinated into that system of the straw man.
Yes, that's right. To accept that we don't have a heart, we don't have a brain, because we're legally dead. In fact, that's the whole premise, I believe, that why Jesus was forgiving sins, which is hamartano, to miss the mark and not receive the inheritance, not a prize like James Strong has in his concordance. It's to miss the mark and not receive an inheritance. Yet, Jesus Christ teaches in John chapter 10, verse 30, he says, I and the Father are one. Then he continues on after they decide to pick up stones and stone him. He says, what I do to make you want to stone me? If you, you being a man, make yourself to be God. And then, of course, then he says, doesn't it say in your own scriptures, which then he quotes Psalm 82, 6, you are Elohim, you are gods. Then he says, if it says in your scripture that you are Elohim or gods, what is it if I say that I am Son of God? Then they go to Romans chapter 8 and shows that we are sons of God, we are children of God, we are adopted as sons, heirs of God, and joint heirs with Christ. You tie that with Hebrews chapter 1, verse 2, which says, after verse 2 says, in these last days he spoke to us by the Son, whom he appointed heir of all, and whom he indeed created the ages, whom he appointed heir of all. Well, that right there tells us that the real living Jesus Christ, not the one that religion created, but the real living one, was given title deed to the earth. If he has title due to the earth, and he's the Son of God, he's the Son of God, we're sons of God, we're joint heirs with Christ, we have joint title to the earth as well. So the next time the state trooper pulls us over and acts like he has authority over us, basically the first answer is, do you hold title deeds to the earth and this road? Bottom line is, they don't. Even in their legal game of fiction, they don't control anything. And so everything they've done to us is based on the concept of illusion. The symbol has become the reality, and the reality has become nothing. And we've been deceived completely, and hopefully that's what we'll end up. I don't mean to get so emotional about this whole thing, but to see what Jesus Christ ultimately did when he was forgiving sins, which is cancellation of a commercial obligation of liability, forgiving debts, which was totally commercial, trespasses, inequities, all those words. And by the way, you ever notice your King James translates it iniquities and not inequities, but the word should be translated the is inequity, not iniquity. It's all commercial. And, and so he was canceling it all before he went to the cross, meaning this. He was born dead like us with a birth certificate. He chose to become free, went to the temple, drove the money changers out, and told the people, you don't owe these people anything. Now, that has not been taught in religion ever.
Yes. Okay, Ron, let's not forget we got Ron on with us here.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ron. I'm sorry, Ron. Go ahead.
Ron, do you have another comment or question?
Yeah, a real quick one. You mentioned the word privilege, and to me that's important. Privilege in law and privilege in Americanese dialect of English may mean some different things, but privilege generally means something granted to somebody else by a higher power or authority. Now, my rights, privileges, come from God. Now, if the clowns inside of Washington, D.C., within that 10 square miles or whatever it is, their privileges are granted by I don't know who. Also, the confines of Washington, D.C. are actually like a different country. It's a different territory, as is federal enclaves, forts, post offices, court buildings, and so forth. Now, there's a provision in the Constitution of the United States. By the way, there is no U.S. Constitution. It's Constitution of the United States, where property gained by the so-called federal government has to actually be purchased. And if it's purchased, there has to be a deed. I know of a guy that was in prison for some time on so-called federal charges, and he stated to me, I haven't seen him for some years, that the federal courthouse that he was tried in, they could never find a deed for the place. So jurisdiction also raises its ugly head from time to time.
Yeah.
Now, the laws, like I said, in Washington, D.C., and the laws here in Pennsylvania don't apply to one another. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, what you're describing, Ron, is referred to as absolute privilege, which is where they don't have to say anything. They work the game that way. That's basically pass go, and do not collect $200, go straight to jail.
Right, the problem is they're not
going to like Monopoly.
I've only been in two court cases where I represented myself. Now, they say he who has himself for a client is a fool for a client or something like that. Well, I think the saying is he who hires a lawyer is a fool.
Is a bigger fool.
Well, in New York.
Can I make a comment about this?
Sure.
The presumption that you were talking about there, Ron, is predicated on the fact that they see us all as 14th Amendment citizens, which is why Tompkins lost the Erie Railroad versus Tompkins case, because he never stated that he was back under the Republic, so they presumed he was under the 14th Amendment status, having no rights. So when the courts operate however they want to upon us, if we don't break the presumption by out of our mouths that we are not 14th Amendment United States citizens, in fact, I would contend to say that we are not dead 14th Amendment United States citizens of the municipal corporation of the District of Columbia, administrative democracy, and its political subdivisions and franchises. And that I am a living son of God, sovereign, king, lord, and priest, and joint heir with Jesus Christ, something to that effect, that would be the part that would break the presumption of them having authority over us and being able to rule upon us.
They're not going to tell you this, but what I used to do years ago when I filled out job applications, they would put, now there's only a scant few of them that ever had it worded properly. They would have, are you a U.S. citizen? I said, no, I'm a citizen of one of the United States. And they looked at me like I was nuts. Well, one time I went into the state employment office for some reason or another, and I did that. They took the form in the back room. It was about 15 minutes later, and they come out with it and said, yeah, that's correct. I said, well, sure it is. I wouldn't have put it on there if it wasn't. Now, it is a mess, but the court is not obligated to tell you anything. When you go in there, you're on your own. You can argue a case administratively, you could argue judicially, but you better know what you're doing. Now, I'm not fast at all, I'm half. So in New York, I won a case where the plaintiff had an attorney, and I represented myself, and the decision did not go to the plaintiff's favor. And I never saw an attorney before stutter and drop his papers on a table.
Mm-hmm.
But here in where I live, we have a very corrupt system, and I lost that one, so... Well, one out of two, I guess, is not too bad. But if you don't know what you're doing when you go into a court, don't go there. I'd suggest hiring somebody. They are not going to tell you anything, and it's a very, very deceitful, corrupt.
Right.
It's an ugly system. One thing in closing, when I
it's
was
an administrative
back,
system.
I'm sorry.
It's, I was just going to say it's an administrative system. They're attorneys at law, operating under an administrative law system. They're not attorneys in law. There's no counselors in law. They're operating a system. And what you actually were, Ron, was you were actually going in there, at least attempting to go in there, sui juris, in your own right, and you weren't representing yourself. You were presenting yourself. And
Right, presenting myself. I put attorney pro se on there. And that was the second thing that made him angry. And the first thing that made him angry is I didn't pay him because I didn't have any money. I went under a pleuris oath. Boy, that really hacked him. But, well, hey, that's life. You know, they can live with it. And that's too bad. They got more money than I got that they stole.
Yeah, you see, when you hire an attorney, not only are you paying that attorney, but he is also working for the system. He is a member of the bar.
Absolutely. And I understand that. When I go in and talk to somebody from time to time, attorney, I understand they're in a bind because they could be persecuted to high heaven, you know. And If they're not comfortable with the case or something, I don't want to burden them in any way like that, because I know that they know what they got themselves into. And I had a friend of mine that just graduated from law school, was working for a year or two on his own with a firm in town. So I was walking down the street, and I saw him, and I said, "Hey, Nick, how you doing?" And he looked at me, and I knew exactly what was going to come out of his mouth. He said, "You know, if I knew it was going to be like this, I never would have entered the profession of law." So he's probably retired, and he's stuck with it. But if you ever go into a courthouse, and you're sitting back in the audience, it's like a theater, and I noticed something strange. Maybe you've noticed this. The backs of all of the wooden chairs, they have the English Union Jack on them. You know that English flag?
Yeah.
All of them. Have you ever been in a court where that happened?
Well, I'm in the West, so I don't see that. But I would imagine in the East, you're seeing this in Pennsylvania or in New York or both?
Pennsylvania. Well, I was in New York for 3.5 years working. That's where I won my case. But the last one I lost 2 years ago was in Pennsylvania, here in the county I live in. And they had the wooden chairs there. And the slats on the back of the chairs were just like the English flag.
I got something for you on that. Stephen Kimball Ames, a few years ago, this is like 15 years ago, put out a report that he found a case. It showed that in 1706 or 1710, 1716, something like that, that the High Court of the Colonies was in Philadelphia, and that you could appeal any case from any one of the colonies that had been appealed up to the Supreme Court there in Philadelphia. And then if you didn't get what you thought was a remedy you needed, you could appeal it up to the crown, to the king. You could appeal to the king. You had 2 years to take your case to the king. Now, I was told that in 1995, now I can't be able to confirm this, and Stephen has disappeared. He was living in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. But he had said to me that that they had amended that, I think it was 1720. That's right, it was 1720. They had amended that 1720 statute. Now, can you imagine, 1720, that's a little bit before 1776. And he said it was amended to show that if you take your case to the Philadelphia High Court, that you have an unlimited time now to appeal it to the Crown of England. Now, that might explain the chairs with the Union Jack on them. Again, I haven't been able to confirm this. I don't live in Pennsylvania. I'm never able to find this. But I was told that in 1995, the Pennsylvania legislature amended that 1720 law that said you had an indefinite amount of time to appeal a case to the court at the king or queen of England.
Yeah, well, the courts now have replaced that symbol with the gold-fringed American flag.
It's an admiralty flag.
Yes.
One more closing thing, and then I'll depart. I even forgot my line of thought here. I better leave it go. I was getting a little bit tired. So, sorry to think you're here so long.
You are.
I wanted to run a few things by you guys.
Okay, well, thanks for your input, Ron. It was very interesting, and do call in again.
Take care.
Okay. Well, there you go, Greg. You see, we've got people out there that understand the game and have actually had some experience in working around this corrupt system. It's really corrupt, even though they call it the Justice Department.
Absolutely. Just us. Just us for just us.
Yes, I was going to say that. I left that for you.
Thank you. It's for just us.
Just us. Well, you know, we go back to the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not kill. They're telling us that, but they do it, don't they?
Well, I think it's because they see us as cattle, slaves, that they can do whatever they want with to us. And literally that is how we're seen. We're not seen as children of God, of the Creator, and we're seen as something to be used. And that's why I personally believe that we have to find an alternative system to the operation of the commercial world. And I think that's what Jesus was laying out 2,000 years ago, was practiced, I think, all the way up until maybe the Nicene Council and a little bit even beyond that in many communities. I think that's maybe what we're being given the opportunity now. That while these men think that they've taken over the world and fully enslaved everybody, that the moving of the, like you said, the opposite of opposing force of righteousness is coming on the scene for people that have said, wait a minute, I'm not going to work to be your slave anymore. And if you take away the fear factor of what's going on, so if we remove the fear, then you can step forward and not worry about what happened. So if we know that we're standing in the protection of the Creator as we're coming forward, like Jesus had done 2,000 years ago to the apostles when they sat and sang hymns while they were in jail cell, that to me is the way that we can go forward and be free. You know, one man at a time causing other ones to be free. So, I mean, we got court cases too. We had a case here in November where a man just got the judges about ready to have him arrested, tasered, and held in contempt of court because he was trying to take over the courtroom, staying outside the bar. And the judge got really upset, and the judge says, "If you think you're taking over this courtroom, you're sadly mistaken. You're a citizen of, you must obey the laws of the United States because you're a citizen of the United States." And the guy said, "Really? I object." "Well, what do you object to?" "Well, my paperwork there says that I'm not a 14th Amendment United States citizen. Therefore, you've got completely the wrong perception of what my status is." And this judge, who was one of the top judges in our county, went from nearly having this guy tasered and arrested with four bailiffs in the courtroom to going silent for 10 seconds. Complete silence. And he went from an angry voice when he spoke the next time to, He turns to the prosecutor and he says, "We may have a problem proceeding with this case."
Yes. And now, you know, that brings up an issue here. This judge, as we suppose that all judges and all attorneys, although I think their qualification for getting into the bar is passing an exam, but the judges take an oath, do they not?
They sure do, absolutely. Even if they don't, you can presume that they did.
Okay, and that oath requires them to uphold the law, and to be a sort of a referee, for lack of a better word, but to make sure that the law is equitably distributed to all, you know, whether they're plaintiffs or whether they're defendants in a case,
yes,
criminal or civil case. And there seems to be no distinction. In fact, they take civil issues and turn them into criminal issues, and then you have these military tribunals throwing people into court without due process, without legal representation of any kind, even without witnesses and without the ability to present a case. What do you call that if that's not tyranny?
It's complete tyranny, and it's all operating on their end with what they think is a clear conscience, because we don't know that we were tricked into becoming slaves with our birth certificate and turned into 14th Amendment slaves with no rights. Everything's a mirror image. It's the exact opposite. It's the simulacra and simulation, to quote Jean Baudrillard, which is the book cover in the movie The Matrix. It's basically the image becomes the reality. And that's what they've done on us. Everything is backwards. So you're presumed when you go into a courtroom to be guilty until proven innocent. A police officer, sheriff's deputy can pull you over, and he acts as judge, jury, executioner, and process server on the side of the road. If we were operating under a true republic, none of this would be able to happen. But it's been played upon victims of ignorance, which is all of us who have been 14th Amendment United States citizens by birth certificate. So
well,
it is
great
tyranny.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it is tyranny, but Don, I believe we've just begun to find our way out of this thing. And by the way, this is worldwide. Whatever we're going to be able to learn here, I believe every man and woman on this planet was born free, to be free by the Creator of the universe. And that's that burning that goes on inside everybody when they have this desire to be free. It's the same teaching of freedom that Jesus Christ taught, and it's the same sense that we all have that same desire. And this may be a way for all of us to become free worldwide.
Mm-hmm. I agree. On one of my first internet interviews on another show and on another network, I was asked a question about my feelings as an American and as a person living on this planet, and how I saw what was happening with the New World Order and all of these covert activities that are designed to undermine us and put us in an absolute form of slavery. And I basically in one sentence asked the host of the show, Daniel Ott is his name actually. It was on the Edge AM radio broadcast. I said, Daniel, I don't recall ever consciously giving up my sovereignty as a child of God. Do you? And he was pretty surprised that I made that statement, but that in essence is what you're saying. That
I am.
If we have been tricked into it by corrupt means, we have a tort there. Now that means that there is something that we can list as one of the reasons why we would sue these people, but it goes far beyond that. That it's a game. It's a game of extortion. It's a game of blackmail, hiding under the color of authority, just like the abusive police officer you described. And I'm not, you know, we're not attacking all police officers.
No, they don't know what they're doing.
They're doing what they were trained and told they had to do as part of their job. And,
right.
And so they are as ignorant of these precepts that you're talking about tonight as the rest of the population.
Exactly. They're operating under the color of law, and we are deemed to be the color of man because H-U-man, which you can throw the E on the H-U-E, we are deemed basically to be the color of man. And so, it's bad enough that we're deemed man to begin with, because if you look at the old feudal definition of man, it basically means a servant or a serf of a lord. So now they've got us not even just being a serf of a lord, they made us even lower. They turned us into the color of man, human, and if you look up human being in 1948 Valentine's Law Dictionary, it defines it as a monster, and you look at it, it says C-S-E-E-C, monster, and monster is in Black's first and second, I think it's pretty much the same in Valentine's 48. It says one of prodigious birth. Let's see, not having the form of man. Bill brought forth in marriage, not having the right of inheritance, which is the whole key to our relationship with God through Jesus Christ's message, which is one that we have a right of inheritance. So they turned us into this human being, this monster, legal fiction, dead entity on paper and in their eyes. And of course we have no rights. And of course when you say the word right, what are you saying? Is it R-I-T-E, Masonic, right, Jesuit, right? Or is it W-R-I-G-H-T, W-R-I-T-E, to write a letter? Or is it R-I-G-H-T, to actually have a specific authority that has been given to us by God? So even there, they screwed with our language. They turned us into human being monsters. We don't even know. So that's what I'm saying. We just have to go back to our sovereign position under God, stated. And by the way, a legal fiction can't speak. All the guys that I've seen get out of court lately who go in there as a sui juris in their own mind, staying outside of the bar, have notified the court before they went there when they could, and when they didn't, like notify them that they weren't a 14th Amendment citizen, that they were sovereign of the Republic or sovereign by the grace of God, that they were not going to allow them to go forward with their process. In fact, I've got a couple quotes here. I could read them on the air real fast before you go off, if you don't mind. They're just real short. That I have to put together an outline that on this line is like what I would say if I'm dragged in front of a magistrate or a commissioner or somebody masquerading as a judge. And by the way, Jesus does address them in Luke 11, verses 37 to 54, where he basically says to the Pharisees, who were the judges, and the scribes, who were the clerks, he says, "Woe unto you, Pharisees, for you tithe the rue and the mint, and yet you pass over the judgment." So they were not ruling with justice 2,000 years ago any more than they are today. Okay, so we're using a negative and a positive averment. And the negative averment goes like this. You know that I am not a dead 14th Amendment United States citizen of the Municipal Corporation of the District of Columbia, administrative democracy at all political subdivisions and franchises. Now the positive averment. You know that I am a living Son of God, Sovereign King, Lord and Priest, and I'm a joint heir of Jesus Christ. And my law is found at Matthew 7:12-14. Of course, 7:12 was therefore all things whatever you desire that men should do to you, so you should do to them, for this is the law of the prophets. Okay. And then the next step of this would be the second point, or the third, depending on how you're counting this, would be a notice, in essence, to the agents and principals of their contract obligation to me. It goes like this. You know that the only contract between us is the one obligating you for me, stating that you will support, defend, and protect all my acquired and vested rights, as secured by the constitutions of your oath, which include, but are not limited to, the Declaration of Independence, 1776, Articles of Confederation, the Constitution of the United States of America, 1787, and as amended by the Bill of Rights, 1791. Now that is now putting them on notice that these are their oath binding them to protect my sovereign position, which is higher than theirs, because now they're in the foreign state position and I'm in the original jurisdiction position. Now I would use the third step would be a notice to administrators and agents, which would be something like this. This is my own wording here. You know that you are bound to the following statements because of your oath as a dead legal fiction agent. Now, they turned us into legal fiction agents, but guess what, Don? All the while they're up there masquerading as agents for this, as for a principal somewhere out there under their administrative world. They're dead legal fiction agents. They turned us into dead legal fiction. So here's what I would bind them under. This is, by the way, a quote from Supreme Court decisions that go back to 1875, including the Brandeis U.S. versus Babcock case of 1919, and a variety of other cases that we could probably, I can get you the cases, you can post them if you can get them up on the web. And I can show you there's a 68 case out of Arizona and another 96 case that uses virtually the same words. But I'm gonna put some words in between. I'm gonna give you the quote first as it goes in the court case. I'm gonna define it secondly. The first way it's in the case is like this. When the state creates rights in individuals against itself, it is not bound to provide a remedy in the courts, and it may withhold all remedy, or it may provide an administrative remedy and make it exclusive, however mistaken its exercise. Okay, now I'm going to define what the state is and who the individual is. When the state, let's just say let's say Idaho. When the state of Idaho, as your sovereign, creates rights in individuals, you as a legal fiction, against itself, it, the state, as your sovereign, is not bound to provide a remedy in the courts and may withhold all remedy, or it may provide an administrative remedy and make it exclusive, however mistaken its exercise. Then the next step would be is to let them know officially that you're not going to allow them to proceed with their administrative game anymore, bring it to a complete halt by saying something like, I'm barring judicial review of all administrative action. That would be the step that would basically break the presumed connections that they had over us, and then I would go for the remedy from there. And according to follow the biblical scriptures that Christ has laid out, I would give mercy to them for one count. Even though they don't do mercy on us at all, I would give them one shot of mercy to dismiss all the charges from their position against me and whatever perceived straw men that they created, and allow them to return all the bonds that they created to me. So I'd say something like this. I offer you only one opportunity to dismiss this case against me with prejudice and return all bonds to me in lawful money of the Republic, which are gold and silver. And I would give them the same amount of time I've seen judges give people to answer, which is 10 seconds. Because I've been in court numerous times, and judges will all give you 10 seconds of silence to actually finish stating your position, and then they move ahead to try to recontract you. So then the second phase of remedy would be, as a sovereign, dismissing the charges and have an order already written up in court with me for myself to sign. The first one, I'd have an order for them to sign, and now if they choose not to do that, I would do it myself, which is basically, this is what I've got written out here, at least right now. Since I'm the only sovereign son of God, Lord, and priest, and no other sovereign son of God has come forth with a claim against me with sovereign witnesses, I dismiss all charges brought forth with prejudice by my order and require all bonds created by this action and all bonds created by the birth certificate since I was born be returned to me with interest and be paid to me in lawful money, which is in gold and silver. And I go into detail on that. And I would sign that order and hand it to the clerk. And if the clerk won't take it in the courtroom, just go down to the clerk's counter downstairs or in the courthouse and hand it to them to file it, and you're done. It's kind of like doing an allocution, which I taught on about 10 years ago. As I learned it from men who'd actually used allocutions in courtrooms and had been convicted of crimes, and at sentencing literally told them we're not going to jail, we're not going to prison, we're not going to do parole, we're not going to pay any fines, and literally turned and walked out of court while the judge was threatening to grab them, arrest them, and some of these were felonies that people walked out of court on, based on doing an allocution. Now, these are people that were innocent. A guilty man can never state his claim as being a sovereign.
Mm-hmm. Now, you brought up a couple of points, if I can comment here before we end
Please
the show.
Don't shut up now. Yes,
you mentioned the definition of human and defined it as, let's say, the man of color, a certain color. Okay. It's been surmised that human also stands for serpent man, and that they've deviously or surreptitiously altered that name or that word serpent into servant. which is very similar. Okay, so there is this reptilian influence in the language, and I'd like to point out something. Now, I totally agree with you on your definition of citizen. I find that it's interesting on how they define it in my computer dictionary. A legally recognized subject or national of a state or commonwealth, either native or naturalized. Now, they're saying a state or a commonwealth, but that doesn't define the United States of America one iota. So to ask you the question, are you a citizen of the United States, doesn't even mean anything by this definition. And then they use the term in a phrase, citizen of the world, a person who is at home in any country. Now, if I'm not at home and I'm in a hotel, does that make me a non-citizen? If I'm sleeping in my car or driving in my car, does that make me a non-citizen by this definition? You see the games that they're playing here with the wording.
Absolutely, yes. Without a doubt. Everything is a trick of the words. Even the word native, when you look at that, you don't even want to be called a native. All the words are used as a deception.
Yes.
That's now, why I don't want to even say that I'm a sovereign citizen anymore. I would say I had a man who was supposedly freed from BATF at his home after he said, I'm a citizen of the Republic. And they left, but I don't even, like you define citizen, I wouldn't use it. I just use the word straight sovereign. If you're going to say sovereign of the Republic or sovereign of God, but I would not use the word citizen. That's my choice too.
Now, by the first definition, and we'll just apply this to an actual case, Barack Obama is neither. Okay, he's neither native nor a naturalized. So, how is it that he's sitting in the White House?
Because he's not the president of the United States. I'm sorry. Go ahead, finish.
Yeah, he can't be. That's the point I'm leading to.
He's not the president of the United States of America. He's only the president of the United States. He's literally the head of a corporation which runs U.S. arms, is the largest arms trafficker in the world, and probably may also be one of the, in charge of the largest drug cartel, illegal drug cartel in the world. But I can tell you this much. He is not the president of the United States of America. I don't believe there has been in the United States. I mean, president of the United States of America since Abraham Lincoln. And I believe that every president since, at least since 1933, there hasn't been a president of the United States of America when they codified the administrative world. And then in 1946, with the Administrative Procedures Act, and in 1948, when Truman signed all the other laws into action, making all the states political subdivisions and franchises of the District of Columbia Municipal Corporation, I don't believe there is a president of the United States of America. I believe that, and the Congress is empty. There's state government. There's no governors. There's no state representatives, no state senators, no secretaries of state in each state. I believe all the Republic positions are empty, and that probably be a point of another show sometime. We could find a way to fill those actual offices with real people, not dead legal fictions.
You're reading my mind, Greg. Yes, I do want to talk about that. In fact, you're going to be on 2 days or 2 nights after Walter Burian. In fact, I've got David Hawkins and Field McConnell on the 16th, the day before Walter Burian. So I've got three forensic economists coming on the show, and Ken Adachi, followed by you. So you'll be with us on the 19th, and I do want to get into this because I'm sitting here while I'm listening to you, and what's popping up is the legality of the Federal Reserve. The power to create money was given exclusively to the U.S. Treasury, not to a foreign entity. And this game, which is legalized theft, extortion, blackmail, fiat money made out of thin air, and usury credit, is contrary to everything that was in the basic Constitution. And none of that has been addressed or repealed. And it's been done by foreigners. So this is massive treason, massive corruption that's been going on since 1913. There's no other way to describe it.
That's right.
With their central bank and their wars and their military-industrial complex and their international corporations and their theft of virtually everything. And the fact that these companies, and I'll name some, like GM, Ford, Boeing, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, the drug manufacturers, the oil companies, they're all owned by foreign entities, and yet they call them American corporations. You know, this is massive fraud that's been committed upon the populace of this country.
I'm thinking, Don, that there, if we could figure out formally how to, and there have been some men who have formally gotten their status recognized by the State Department, and the and issues orders have come out through the Attorney General's office for them to be left alone in the NCIC computer system. I believe that we could take this all the way to the point of that. That, like, for example, the Federal Reserve Bank, it operates, it's the bank for the administrative world. Now, most of the people on the planet are not, even if everybody heard our discussion tonight as an introduction to the concept of becoming free, most people would, people are so indoctrinated into becoming, receiving benefits from a government that they wouldn't even apply this issue of becoming free. But for those of us that do want to be free, so in other words, so there has to be a banking system, a corrupt system to help keep these people enslaved until they send them off to another war to die or something as chattel. But for the, like right now, I would say this. Those of us that know the truth and find ourselves as sovereigns, which is the way we're supposed to be by the creator of the universe, we don't have to go fight those wars. Our kids don't have to go fight those wars. We can just say, like Neo says at the end of The Matrix, or to quote Nancy Reagan in her drug campaign, just say no. You know, I mean, literally, the power of saying no. You know, I don't want to get into it now, but I said no to a police officer, and I kind of screwed up part of the stop, and then after a minute he wanted some more information from me, and I said no. And believe it or not, he didn't try to push for it. My no was no. And I said no to a couple things, and finally, you know, but the long and short of it is we have the power to say no to the system when we stand up and become the living, breathing, thinking, physical men, spiritual men that we're supposed to be. It's kind of like in John chapter 3 when Nicodemus had come to Jesus and asked how he could be born again. He didn't understand how can I go back into my mother's womb. And literally what Jesus was telling them, like we're talking about, no, it's not coming down the birth canal from water again. It's now being born above by the Spirit, which is symbolized by fire. And so what's happening with the brain in you and me, Don, and people like Ron and others that are listening, is this fire of freedom. It's the Spirit. You know, Spirit is symbolized by fire, and Spirit is just simply in Greek is pneuma, which means breath. So the breath of God is in each of us. Now, when are each of us going to stand up and say, wait a minute, that breath of God in me is greater and mightier than David Rockefeller or Queen Elizabeth II or the Pope in the Vatican or any of these banker industrialists? And when are we going to wake up and realize that when Jesus was canceling sins, it's just like today. Somebody says you owe on a mortgage. Prove it. Support what you lent me. I'm a sovereign. I stand under God. Show me that some substance was lent to create that mortgage and shows that you have legitimacy. We have theories now, Don, that says that the land patents were stolen through the notes, the deeds of trust and the notes, when they used words like grant, grantor, granted, and they put words like security agreement in quotes, and they put borrower in quotes and lender in quotes. I would surmise, my theory after studying the mortgage business for the last 20 years, is that when they put security agreement in quotes, it doesn't mean security agreement. It means what the opposite of that would be, because they don't define it in the document. In a borrower, in quotes, they don't define borrower in the document, thus borrower must be the lender. When they put lender in quotes, that must mean the lender is the borrower. And when you take and reverse all of this thing, this all illusionary world of the simulacra and simulation, how they've tricked us, you can literally go back to sovereigns and say no.
Well, one thinks that it makes it a secure document or a secure contract, when in reality they are playing it in the securities market.
But it was a fraud from the beginning, because you go into a thing called escrow, and escrow in common French vernacular, get this, means to commit fraud or to defraud.
Yes. Well, we have run out of time, and I have to end the show, and your no doesn't apply here. So.
I know.
So I want to thank you, Greg Pappas, for being on the show. And are there any websites or any particular places you want to point people to if they want to read up and do some studying on their own?
Boy, well, the USA the Republic, it's USA-the-Republic is where you can read. USA the Republic is the house that no one lives in, by Lee Probst. So you can just do a Google search and type in Lee Probst, that's B like in boy, R-O-B-S-T, and that would be a primer on what I'm teaching about our foundations of being presumed to be 14th Amendment citizen slaves and leaving that to become sovereigns of the republic. And I would suggest everybody, it's really a short book. I'd say read it like three times through, the first time real fast. That'd be the first one. Then, and so like I said, you can Google USA the Republic is the house that no one lives in, or just Lee Brobe's name. And the other thing I would say is I've written some articles on elocution that were the Idaho Observer a few years ago. You could probably go to Idaho Observer archives and look up a couple of those. And then I would tell everybody, if you can, it's going to sound really crazy, but I'd like everybody to watch the first movie, The Matrix. And I'm working on a book on that subject now to lay out how the secrets to the system was put in that movie and how we can use that movie to unravel the rest of their secrets.
Yes. Now, if I told the listening audience how many times you've seen that movie, they'd think I jumped into the deep end. How many times have you watched The Matrix?
About 50 times, and literally just now have gotten the full message out of the movie. There's now one scene in that movie. It's put in literal chronological order. Everything is laid out. Whoever wrote that had to be 180th degree Freemason. I know it supposedly doesn't exist, but I'm convinced on the compass it goes to 180 degrees, that they've got to go that high. And whoever did that was putting out all their secrets thinking we'd never figure it out. So, yeah, it's the movie is literally scripted by a genius on the dark side, who was very cocky and didn't think we'd ever see what was there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or
well,
somebody who was repenting. I don't know which. You know, somebody
yeah.
repenting.
Okay. Well, it was a very interesting show, and I look forward to your next interview on the 19th of March. And I want to thank you for being with us and fielding Ron's question and carrying on this dialogue. It was very interesting.
Thank you, Don, very much. Look forward to the next one.
Okay, I'm going to say goodnight to our listening audience. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. And special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making not only BBS Radio, but Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick on the sound. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I want to wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light. Tune in tomorrow. In the meantime, have a good night.